Welcome to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. It's good to get together again to provide facts to our community through Zoom technology and our spoken words. Thank you for listening. I am Pat Schlarbaum, your host for the hour, with engineer Mike Murphy, and good neighbor and friend Mike Metz is here as keeper of the Prairie Winds Prairie. What's new on the prairie, Mike?
Well, the snow that was expected is starting to pile up out there. We've already got at least a quarter inch. The flakes are getting bigger. And everything's hunkered down, I'm sure, out there right now. A lot smarter than we are, Pat.
They've got an insulation on the way of a nice snow cover, it sounds like. And there is a full slate of Local Talk guests in the wings, so to speak, with information from our fair region of Iowa later in the hour. For your enjoyment on this day, the 14th of January, 2022.
And like we were indicating, the weather looks like winter is revisiting us after a couple of warm days of above freezing temperatures. Today there is snow in the forecast with between 7 and 11 inches and a high of 33. Lows tonight down to 13. Highs in the low 20s over the weekend and lows on Saturday of 1. Warmer the first part of next week in the 30s and low of minus 5 forecast for Wednesday next week.
Okay.
I'd like to take a moment to remember the passing this week of Clyde Bellecourt, an Ojibwe native and co-founder of the American Indian Movement. Mr. Bellecourt, with Carter Camp, Russell Means, and Dennis Banks, journeyed to Washington, D.C. in November of 1972 on the Trail of Broken Treaties. The caravan they proceeded was 4 miles long and included 1,000 activists from more than 200 tribes in 25 states. Upon arriving at Washington, D.C., they occupied the Bureau of Indian Affairs to bring national attention to Native grievances. And this from November 6, 1972, 50 years ago, from that occupation. Quote, "The most important thing we won was to have brought to the world the condition of our people," Clyde Bellecourt, a leader of the American Indian Movement, said in a Washington Post article from that time. "This is our country," Bellecourt said. "This is our land. We have the right to live and thrive." So rest in peace. Your time here is done. Nigan we waywedin, the thunder before the storm. And your work continues. Vernon Clyde Bellecourt was 85. Now let's welcome Dennis Hart, who worked so diligently at gathering the news for this week from the pages of our local newspaper.
The coronavirus, the opening of this year's state legislative session, and a driverless tractor all made big news in the Ames Tribune this past week. Let's start with last Friday's paper, which reported that days before a federal coronavirus vaccine mandate was set to take effect nationwide for employers with 100 or more workers, local, county, city, and school administrators in Iowa were scrambling to determine the best course of action. Many were waiting for final word from the U.S. Supreme Court, which had heard arguments last Friday on whether the federal requirements should go forward. The mandate from the Occupational Health and Safety Administration was set to start being enforced this past Monday. The Nevada and Boone school districts had already enacted mandates, as had the Story County Board of Supervisors. The city of Ames had notified workers that they would need to report their vaccination status. Des Moines had not yet implemented a vaccination program or testing mandate. Then, yesterday, came word that the Supreme Court had halted enforcement of the vaccine mandate for big employers, saying the Biden administration does not have the authority to impose vaccine or testing requirements on those employers. The court did allow the vaccine requirement for most healthcare workers at facilities that receive Medicaid and Medicare money. The Trib also reported that the Iowa Department of Transportation is seeking public input as it proposes improvements to U.S. Highway 65 in Story and Hardin counties. Those improvements would impact the route from a half mile south of US 30 in Story County to Iowa 175 in Hubbard, and will involve the replacement of 5 single box culverts. Construction is expected to start next year. Comments on the project must be given by January 24th. And there was a story about a Boone woman who is an advocate for the deaf, who has launched her own virtual and in-person series of American Sign Language classes. Autumn Nigro Weaver's mission is to help bridge the communication gap between the hearing impaired and those who communicate only verbally. She herself has restricted hearing, and she's traveled the world, translating for deaf people, and she performs with the Boone Community Theater. Her classes will be offered in Boone, Ames, Madrid, and Ogden. Saturday's Trib reported that on the anniversary of the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol, Democrats in Iowa's U.S. Senate race were trying to keep the issue top of mind for voters, as Republican incumbent Chuck Grassley pushed to move the conversation to, as he put it, issues that bring our country together. But former Navy Admiral Mike Franken, a Democrat seeking the nomination to run against Grassley, said, in his words, "One does not serve the nation in military service to watch idly while it is dismembered by the likes of Donald Trump and his accomplices, to include Chuck Grassley." Former Democratic Iowa House member Abby Finkenauer said she was motivated to run for Grassley's seat by the attack and by what she said was his failure to hold those responsible to account. And former State Democratic Representative Bob Krause said he supports efforts to protect American democracy in the future. Sunday's Trib reported on the meeting held in Ames about one of the proposed carbon capture pipelines that would make its way through Iowa. Officials with the company Navigator CO2 Ventures of Texas fielded questions and heard comments from about 100 people. The meeting was one of 36 the company plans to host across the state. Those in attendance predominantly expressed their opposition to the pipeline plans, as well as wariness over pipeline safety and its potential effect on the environment. If those plans are approved, the pipeline planned by Navigator and another one proposed by the Summit Carbon Solutions Company would run through several states, including Iowa, and gather liquefied emissions from more than 40 ethanol plants along the way. The Trib also had word about a new study that could shed some light on commuters' habits in and out of Ames. That study could reveal commuting patterns, which are especially important to local businesses. The most recent study found that about half of the Ames workforce lived and worked in the city, while the other half lives outside of Ames and commutes. Most of those workers, 81% of them, live within 24 miles of the city. In that last study, done 2 years ago, 10 Ames employees lived in Waterloo, 106 miles away. There was also word that the John Deere Company had unveiled what it called the next revolution in agriculture, an autonomous tractor. That's right, a driverless tractor. The company expects to start building it later this year in Waterloo. Deere did not say how much the tractors would cost. At first, the self-guided row crop tractors will be programmed for tillage. A company spokesperson said farmers need driverless tractors because of a growing labor shortage. At the same time, a rising global population is increasing the demand for food. And there was word that the Actors Group in Ames was gearing up for its next presentation, which will be Agatha Christie's mystery Murder on the Orient Express. It will open January 27th and run through February 6th. Tuesday's paper reported that Iowa lawmakers had returned to the state capitol to open this year's state legislative session. Republicans control both houses of the legislature, and they say they want to push ahead on issues that have been historic priorities for them, including tax cuts and a comprehensive workforce package. Democrats say they also want to fix Iowa's workforce shortage and avoid polarizing legislation that they say has caused workers to leave the state. The Trib reported on 5 issues that lawmakers are expected to tackle this legislative session: cutting taxes, more parental choice in education, more action against coronavirus vaccine mandates, the workforce shortage, and abortion. The Trib also reported that Republican leaders in the state Senate had decided not to let journalists work at press benches in the Senate chamber, ending a tradition that has lasted for more than a century. This year, journalists will be seated in the public gallery on an upper level, without access to the Senate floor. Republicans have majority control in the Senate, so they can decide who is allowed in the chamber. And the Trib reported that St. Cecilia School in Ames may offer classes for 6th graders next fall. The school has 164 students enrolled in preschool through 5th grade. No decision on whether to add a 6th grade class will be made until next month. Most of the school's current students come from Ames or Gilbert, and those public school systems are the ones students most go to after 5th grade at St. Cecilia. Wednesday's Trib reported that the Ames School Board had voted Monday night to adopt a policy that aligns with federal coronavirus vaccination and testing requirements, while other Story County school districts decided to wait for a decision on those workforce requirements from the U.S. Supreme Court. The Federal Occupational Safety and Health Administration was mandating that employers with 100 or more workers get vaccinated against the virus or wear face masks and provide proof of having undergone coronavirus testing each week. But as I reported earlier in this newscast, the Supreme Court yesterday blocked those workplace vaccine rules for big employers. The Ames District had said it would only enforce the requirement if the High Court had ruled it was constitutional and if the federal government was willing to take over enforcement from the state. The Gilbert and Roland Story School District boards had agreed to do nothing about the OSHA requirement at present. The Trib also had word that Drake University students in Des Moines would begin the first 2 weeks of their spring semester remotely because of possible classroom disruptions caused by the coronavirus. As of yesterday, Iowa State University, the University of Iowa, and the University of Northern Iowa all planned to have in-person learning. And the Trib reported that Story County would celebrate Martin Luther King Jr. Day this coming Monday night. It starts at 6:30 at the Ames City Auditorium on 5th Street. Yesterday's Trib reported that Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds had proposed a 4% flat income tax rate and that the state no longer taxed retirement income during her Condition of the State address Tuesday night. She laid out her 2022 agenda in a speech to the state legislature. That includes the tax cuts, cuts to the state's unemployment system, a $1,000 retention bonus for teachers, law enforcement, and corrections officers, and scholarships to let parents pay for their students to attend private schools. The Trib also reported that the Ames City Council had voted to require masks at all city council, commission, and board meetings when social distancing is not possible. The city anticipates the measures will only be necessary until the current coronavirus surge subsides. The Trib also had word that Central Iowa school boards had made different decisions on whether to adopt a proposed federal mandate ordering large employers to require workers to either be vaccinated against the coronavirus or wear masks and commit to weekly testing. School boards in Ames and Waukee voted to move forward with vaccine and testing policies. The Ankeny school board decided this week to walk away from the federal mandate. And as it turns out, that proposed mandate was tossed out by the U.S. Supreme Court yesterday. And there was a report that the Ames School Board had voted to raise the pay of hourly employees and educational assistants in the district. Hourly workers will get a pay raise of $1.43 an hour, while educational assistants will see a hike of $1.65 an hour. Meanwhile, Ballard School Board approved raising the pay of substitute teachers to $140 a day. And that is your summary of the week's news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart. Thank you for tuning in. I'm taking the weekend off now, but I'll plan to be right back here in this same virtual seat this coming Monday, when I'll report on what's been making news around Iowa. And there's been a whole lot of that. Until then, it's going to be cold this weekend, so I hope you do your best to stay warm, safe, and healthy.
Pachamama.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, with your Week in the News and the music interlude, Pachamama by Big Blue Sky. Let's welcome Anna Gray with the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation. Hi, Anna.
Good morning.
Great to have you with us. You are the Public Policy Director for the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation. Can you explain that? What are your responsibilities?
Yeah, so as the Public Policy Director at Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation, I really help implement public policy that furthers our mission, which is protecting and restoring Iowa's land, water, and wildlife. So I work closely with a number of partners and grassroots organizations across the state, and directly with legislators at both the state and federal level, but the legislative session starting this week, really focusing at the state level.
And you're pretty busy woman then this week. Are they in session today on Friday?
They're not usually in session on Fridays, usually Monday through Thursday, but actually they'll have this next Monday off as well. So with kind of an extended weekend, there might be some good local forums.
I'm sure it's been a real flurry of activity, but it's good to know that Baby Fridays is a little different. So how did it get started for the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation, do you feel?
Yeah, so far, you know, we're very optimistic. For the past several years, our top priority has been funding the Natural Resources and Outdoor Recreation Trust Fund. And in order to fund that, the sales tax would have to be increased by at least 3/8 of 1 penny. And so the legislature this year is talking a lot about tax reform. And so our hope is that the sales tax and the trust fund is part of those greater tax reform discussions.
And as I recall, back in 2019, Governor Kim Reynolds proposed some tax modifications, and this had some hope. But of course, then with coronavirus and things kind of shifted. But are you feeling relatively confident that this may have an opportunity of being supported legislatively?
Yeah, we do hope so. So Governor Reynolds introduced the Invest in Iowa Act back in 2020, and then the pandemic hit and that kind of got tabled. So she led the session with her condition of the state address Tuesday evening, and the Natural Resources and Outdoor Recreation Trust Fund was not part of the proposal that she laid out. However, Senator Dawson, the chair of the Ways and Means Committee in the Senate, said the other day that the trust fund was one of his priorities. And so the House, the Senate, and the governor will each kind of come up with their own version of tax reform and then try to work together to sort it out. So we're hopeful that the final version of whatever comes out does include the trust fund.
And one of the versions of this legislation you're referring to, and many of our listeners might recall, back in 2010, there was a Iowa Water and Land Legacy Act that we voted on. I believe 63% of Iowa voters felt in 2010 that this would be a proper expenditure of 3/8 of 1% of the next, if there was a tax increase or a tax modification. And somewhat languished, you know, this would be the 12th year that this has been on the horizon. I think 63% of Iowans that in 2010 possibly has even grown to a higher percentage of a hunger to address some of our conservation needs.
Yeah, we certainly know that there's a growing support for funding the trust. So as you mentioned, the trust was created in the state constitution in 2010 by Iowa voters. And what that constitutional amendment says is that the next time that the sales tax is increased, the first 3/8 of 1 penny will be dedicated to the Natural Resources and Outdoor Recreation Trust Fund to support things like water quality, recreational trails, soil conservation. However, in Iowa, it requires an act of the legislature to raise the sales tax. That's not something that we could have done on that ballot initiative. So we're really depending on the legislature to fund the trust. So while it's been created for more than 12 years now, it's never been funded. So it's a huge missed opportunity. So we're really urging the legislature to finally pull that trigger and fund the trust and see a significant increase in conservation and outdoor recreation funding.
Is that the best language then as we approach our legislators to fund the trust?
Yep. I think it's pretty simple. And I think most of them have heard of the trust fund or IWLL, or Iowa's Water and Land Legacy. We kind of use those terms synonymously. So most of them have heard of this, but it is important that they hear from their local constituents and not just from people like me all the time. And so it can be very simple with just sharing why you want natural resources protected in your area. Why is your local trail important to you? So it can be very simple, very personal. Our legislators, I think, are very approachable. And so, you know, I encourage folks to do that.
Could you just walk us through a visit to the Capitol? I guess, is this kind of your primary work destination for when the legislature is in session? It's a beautiful building, my goodness. But there is security to enter the building, and some of the entrances are blocked off. But so where would you recommend a visitor to the Capitol? How would they go about parking and making this all work?
So there are maps on the Iowa legislative website that can help direct to public parking. But then once you do find a place to park, you can look for signs around the building that say public entrance, usually on that ground level. And then you'll go in, there is some security. So you'll go, you know, put your items kind of on a metal detector screener and walk through the metal detector. But it's usually very simple, very painless. And then from there, you'll head upstairs. There are usually lobbyists or folks like me up there, so never hesitate to ask, hey, I'm trying to find so-and-so. You can also reach out to your legislator ahead of time, which I would recommend, and just sending them an email. Their email addresses, again, are all listed on the Iowa legislative website. So you can send them an email and just say, hey, I'm going to be up at the Capitol on this day. I would really like to talk with you. And so then when you get up to the Capitol, there's a place by the chamber doors where you fill out a little slip, you put your name and who your legislator is and maybe what you're wanting to talk with them about. And then you'll give that to the doorman and then they deliver it to the legislature and then they'll come back out when they're available and come talk with you.
Yeah, you go through the doorman. I think the House of Representatives is on the north side of the building and the Senate on the south. So go through that door, man. And like you say, it's all doable. It's something that a lot of people probably do it every day, but for different causes. Mike Metz, the co-host, has a question for you, Anna.
Yeah, Anna, Mike Metz here. I was wondering if, in light of the COVID, if people have realized how important our natural environment is and folks being able to get out and for their mental and physical health, if you could comment on that. And then also perhaps address the idea about REAP, Resource Enhancement and Protection, if that is wrapped into this or not.
Yeah, great question. So first, yes, we've seen a significant increase in the use of our parks and trails and public open spaces. Some of our data shows more than double the amount once the pandemic hit because people were looking for opportunities to get out of the house in a safe way. So we have definitely seen people rediscovering Iowa and some of the opportunities that it has. But one thing that kind of has done is also put extra pressure on some of our parks and amenities. Mm-hmm. And so we're needing to see that those are investments that the state could be making to help support our outdoor amenities and the quality of life opportunities for Iowans. And then your second question was about REAP, or the Resource Enhancement and Protection Program. So that's a program that's been around for over 30 years now. It's widely accepted as Iowa's most effective and efficient conservation program. So it funds things, many of the same things that the Natural Resource and Outdoor Recreation Trust Fund would fund, and is actually included as part of the trust fund. And so if the trust was funded, REAP would also receive funding from the trust fund. REAP also had their biannual REAP Congress, where representatives, local citizens, come together at the Capitol in Des Moines and make motions and put forth resolutions to send to the legislature to make recommendations for REAP. And one of those recommendations is always fully fund REAP. The REAP is authorized to receive $20 million in appropriations, but it always gets cut down to 12 or lower. And so we'd like to certainly see an increase in REAP funding, if not fully funding of the trust fund.
Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ida, you seem to have a very strong foundation in your environmental perspectives and ethics. Are you from Iowa?
I am. I grew up down in Centerville, Iowa, in Appanoose County, most of the time on my family farm. So that's really where I discovered my love of the outdoors for the first time. And I went to Iowa State, studied agricultural business and economics, and then law school at Drake, where I really focused in on food, ag, and environmental law and policy. And so that's how I got introduced to INHF, and I've been in my role now for about 3 years.
And the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation, INHF, what great conservation work you do. I quite frankly consider your organization as one of the premier conservation organizations for the state of Iowa. And I appreciate so much that you had time to come on Local Talk and kind of give us, you know, a background in current situation. And is there anything in the future that you would like to see maybe beyond funding this trust? Where can we go for things that matter to you the most, Ana Gray?
Yeah, so I would say, you know, funding the Natural Resources and Outdoor Recreation Trust Fund is certainly our number one priority and has been for the last 12 years. And until we are ready to make a significant investment in something that we know Iowa voters approved and support, I think that that really needs to be our laser focus for the time. We do have resources at inhf.org where you can find information about how to engage with your legislators, more about some of the background about some natural resource policies. And you can also find my email address there too. So feel free to reach out to me personally. I'm always happy to talk about this stuff.
Well, it's certainly a pleasure and a privilege meeting you through Zoom. But keep up the good work. Thank you for all you do for conservation. Ana Gray with the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation.
Well, thank you so much.
You are listening to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio. I'm your host, Pat Schlarbaugh. I'm with co-host Mike Metz and engineer Mike Murphy. Let's welcome Mary Rankin, Sustainability Coordinator for the City of Ames and Iowa State University. Welcome, Mary Rankin.
Good morning. Hello. Happy Friday.
Well, happy Friday to you, Mary Rankin. Gosh, it's great to have you with us in this 2022.
Indeed. And it's quite the winter wonderland where you've got brewing up outside, isn't it?
Oh, you know, now that you, yeah, it has been snowing. It hadn't started when I came in, but yeah, I see now. We're just able to look out. Well, it'll be a nice insulation, don't you think?
And oh my goodness, we need it. Yes, it's winter, and this is what should be happening, honestly, in our state. And you know what else should be happening in our community is celebrating the wonderful commitment of our business community through the Smart Business Challenge Recognition Luncheon that is actually coming up next week that I wanted to spend some time on today.
Yeah, and just to kind of refresh our listeners, then the Smart Business Challenge is something. Is this your creation, or is that something that, how did that get started?
I cannot take credit for this this initiative in the community. Actually, it was an initiative that was first brought to City of Ames Electric Services Department by the Chamber of Commerce here in Ames. They were looking at an opportunity to engage and empower their membership in being more sustainable. And they thought a opportunity to go through a checklist and to get a certification sounded like a really interesting idea. And so we started meeting, we started having different discussions on how this could take place, and ended up that we thought it would be a great opportunity for all community businesses, mm-hmm. not just chamber members, but yet the chamber was there the whole way in assisting us in getting everything up and running, and then was our very first business to go through the challenge.
And we have heard about the Smart Business Challenge. So here at KHOI, we gladly embrace all that this Smart Business Challenge represents for the businesses here in Ames.
Well, you did indeed. And you not only embraced it, Pat, you jumped in and you became a part of the Smart Business Challenge, mm-hmm. and in fact, went through the certification process. So I think you all can, everyone on the station team can give a firsthand account of what that process is like, and some really good, you know, pieces of information that you've been able to gather and able to learn. And of course, I have to say, celebrating your silver certification within the challenge.
And we have other aspirations to grow. It was wonderful that our station manager at that time, Ursula Rudenberg, kind of guided us in your direction. And it's just been a strengthening opportunity at every threshold. So we're still in touch with you.
And we are excited. We're excited to continue that relationship and provide those resources. And speaking of resources, I've been so very, honored every year to have such wonderful interns that come and work with me, both for the City of Ames and Iowa State University. And I'm excited today to welcome two of those amazing, fabulous interns that are directly responsible for the Smart Business Challenge for this year. So joining me today are Lydia Youngquist and Lucia Rizzo. And before I start talking to both of them, or we start talking to both of them about the upcoming recognition luncheon, I just wanted to take an opportunity, because I think it's so fun for our listeners to meet and get a little bit of insight into these amazing students that offer their services through internship opportunities in sustainability each year. And I wanted to ask Lydia and Lucia to introduce themselves to our listeners, just giving us a little bit of background, who you are, what you're studying at Iowa State, future visions, and what is it about sustainability that's so important to you. So I think I'll start with Lydia.
Hi, everyone. My name is Lydia Youngquist. I'm from Iowa City, Iowa, but I'm currently a senior in accounting at Iowa State. After graduation, I want to go into nonprofit financial work. How it relates to sustainability is something that I've always been really passionate about, because it's our future. I think it's really important to do our part to build our community and create a cleaner world. So nonprofit relates to like social sustainability. So this is just a great, this internship is a great opportunity to combine my business knowledge and then just passion for sustainability in the community and be able to make an impact with the businesses in the Ames community.
Thank you so much, Lydia. Lucia.
Hi, I'm Lucia Rizzo, and I'm a senior at Iowa State University, and I'm studying business analytics and marketing. And I am really passionate about sustainability as well. Lydia summed it up perfectly, and that I think it's super important in creating a future that's worth living and keeping future generations to where they need to be. So I am super excited to continue with this internship and studying and learning as much as I can about sustainability.
Together, quite a team.
And these are only two of our eight members this year. So we'll have to get the other ones on as well. But yes, Pat, can you tell? It's hard not to be inspired by working with such inspiration. And to keep that motivation, the future is incredibly bright due to this wonderful energy that we have within our community and certainly within our world. And so as we talk about this event coming up, I know we talked a little bit, gave a little bit of hints about how the challenge started, but I just wanted to remind our listeners of what the challenge is really about, what its goals are, and what being a part of the challenge would mean to a business and has meant to a business. And Lydia, I wondered if you could jump in with that information. Or actually, no, I apologize. Lucia, I would like you to jump in on that because I have another question for Lydia. So Lucia, can you talk a little bit about the goals and just the challenge itself?
Yes, absolutely. So the Smart Business Challenge is all about celebrating the great things that businesses and AIMS are doing to help promote sustainability, all of the policies, procedures, and little small acts that they do every day. So it is really great to see how beneficial it is to all of the businesses because it provides them with different resources to be able to enhance their commitment to sustainability.
Thank you so much, Lucia, for that little bit of background. And Lydia, now, can you talk about how many businesses are in the challenge right now?
Yeah, we have 35 businesses in the challenge with 28 of them certified.
Yeah, and to be certified, I guess I would back up for our listeners a little bit. We mentioned sort of that checklist that the chamber had talked about putting together. And so what we have done is we have put together a four-tiered certification checklist opportunity. And we have that checklist representing 11 different areas of sustainability. So both Lydia and Lucia alluded to sustainability as social sustainability, economic sustainability. Certainly, Pat, we've talked on many occasions about environmental sustainability. So there's those three facets of sustainability. And it's been very important in this challenge to encourage our businesses to be reminded of all that they are doing in sustainability, and not just maybe the traditional considerations of sustainability related to waste and energy and water. While they're also, you know, while those areas are certainly important, it's also very important of engaging a community and reaching out to the community and being a part of that embracement within the community. And so to that regard, these different areas encompass all of those considerations of sustainability. And to be certified, we have bronze, silver, gold, and even platinum levels. And at the bronze level, we're really looking about what education and awareness that businesses are doing related to each of these different areas of sustainability. Within the silver category, then, we are looking at what practices or procedures are in place to support within day-to-day business operations, those different areas of sustainability. And in the gold area, then, we are looking at what sort of standard is set related to incorporating each of these sustainability areas into ongoing business operations. So a sort of policy or standard operating procedure has been actually verbalized and made made official by the company to their employees as well as to their customers. And then there's sort of that opportunity for businesses to go above and beyond and doing something that we didn't even think about to include in the checklist, but that they have made that commitment. And so with that little bit of background, Lydia, can you offer a little bit more information as far as how many businesses that are in the challenge are certified in those different levels? And I guess, maybe just even noting how many platinum businesses we have, because I think that's really amazing in our community.
Yeah. So at our current levels, we still have some in the process, so it's a little bit off, but we have 3 bronze certified, 9 silver certified, 5 gold certified, and 11 platinum certified.
And so, Pat, I think that's a really interesting mix to consider. And I think it speaks well to the thought really given by the chamber in suggesting this opportunity and by all the partners that work together to bring this opportunity forward, because the platinum businesses don't necessarily represent really large international companies only within our community. Certainly there are some large international companies that are within our, that, you know, have locations within our communities that are platinum, but we've really set this challenge up so that it doesn't matter the size of your business. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter how many employees you have. It doesn't matter if you rent or own your business, that you really individually have that opportunity to become a platinum business due to your individual commitment, you know, that you have made. And so that's what I think is so unique about this challenge. Mm-hmm. Is that really it is meant to embrace all businesses and embrace our community collectively. So that's a little bit of background about the challenge. And so now we're looking at the fact of, let's go through some event specifics, how to get involved in this event coming up next week. And the intent of this event is really to celebrate all of the commitment our collective community businesses are making that are involved in the challenge, and to encourage businesses that haven't yet joined the challenge to attend our event and learn a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And so with that in mind, Lydia, can you go through some of the specifics, when, where, about the event? And I already gave a little bit of information on who can attend, but maybe you could just reiterate that.
Yeah, so our luncheon is just a way to celebrate the accomplishments of our businesses. Due to current COVID considerations, the event will be held on Zoom on January 20th, starting at 11:45 a.m. I think all of our Smart Business Challenges are invited, as well as potential new businesses are encouraged to attend. Since it's on Zoom, anyone can just stop by. I think the link will be posted on the City of Ames website. So cityofames.org/smartbusinesschallenge.
Yes, I would jump in and say that information is updated, including the Zoom link on the Smart Business Challenge website. So absolutely. And we do actually also offer the opportunity that when we are going to be in person, we were going to offer box lunches from Weedsfield. We are still going to do that on a delivery service. We have a few members from the City of Ames team that is going to assist with doing some delivery. And to that regard, then, if there is interest of a business that wants to attend, whether or not you are a member and you are interested in ordering a lunch, we would ask you to contact Jackie Higgins at Electric Services in order to RSVP on that City of Ames website that Lydia just mentioned. We do have Jackie's contact information, but you can also just give a call to City of Ames Electric Services. And so to get everybody a little, one thing that I would say is we are limiting 5 meals per business, but you can join and you can share as well. So now that we've given some background information on the event, when and where, Lucia, could you jump on and tell us a little bit about the agenda for the event and why this would be something that's got interest for everyone?
Yeah, well, you guys covered the first part of it. It is unfortunately going to be virtual, but that doesn't mean that we can't still have a good time. Mayor Halia will be commenting, which is super exciting. We're glad to have him there. And our event speaker this year is Yule Herbert, who is from the Sustainability Solutions Group. So we are very excited to have him and hear about all of the things that he is going to speak to us about in connection with the City of Ames Climate Action Plan. So we're really excited for that. And I would also like to shout out Lydia and I, who are going to do a little presentation about the Smart Business Challenge. And so we're super excited to give that and to be able to speak to all of our members, and to be also to congratulate all of our platinum members as well.
Thank you. I think that is a fabulous summation of what to expect in being on our Zoom celebration. I would mention that the Zoom link will officially go live at 11:30, and we will have a few sort of informational slides that will be available to everyone, and then we will officially kick off the event at 11:45 for the event to end no later than 1:15. And I wanted to spend just a little bit of time also highlighting again our keynote speaker for this year. So Lucia mentioned Yul Herbert will be joining, and Yul is one, of course, of our consultants working on the City of Ames' current climate action plan. Yul is one of the founding partners of the Sustainability Solutions Group that is overseeing this process. And I know, Pat, that there's been discussion on KHOI a few different times since Council passed this very impressive and progressive goal for our community related to our reduction in greenhouse gas emissions. And that is a science-based fair share goal, which actually looks at reducing our collective community greenhouse gas emissions by 83% by 2030, toward then getting us to net zero emissions by 2050. And so this is a very exciting undertaking, and one that is going to require the entirety of our community to really give consideration and passion and energy, creativity, and just a lot of, I think, out of the box and systems thinking. And so Yul is really going to offer that kickoff, having worked with communities all around the world and offered different solutions and teased out different ideas and opportunities. Yul is going to start talking specifically about what is, you know, where are the opportunities within our business community in considering this low carbon future? And so I think that that will be an extremely valuable discussion and message. And of course, we will have city staff, including Lucia and Lydia, being there to answer questions and provide more information about different resources that the city can offer and helping to make those connections. Yeah. I will add that in the event that individuals aren't able to join us via Zoom, we will be taping event and putting that on the website, that link. And so individuals can refer to Yul's presentation as well as the rest of the meeting afterwards.
This is just great. At every opportunity, you're able to weave in the individuality of each business and how that fits into the big picture of our climate action plan. What a great way to have lunch with your compatriots and grow the sustainability in the business community of Ames through the Smart Business Challenge Luncheon, January 20th, 11:30. Learn more at the City of Ames. Thank you so much, Mary Rankin.
Lydia Pat, you are very welcome. I would also mention one thing. If people are interested in RSVPing to get meals, do it today.
Yeah.
By around lunchtime. So please jump on and make that contact. Otherwise, you can jump on the Zoom link and join us. No worries at all.
Okay, sounds great. Meet for lunch. Thank you, Mary Rankin. Thank you, Lucia Reza.
Thank you, Pat.
Yeah, thanks, you, Lydia Youngquist.
Absolutely. Have a great day.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
The valley of the shadow of my own death and darkness, I shall fear no. Fear no apparent evil, for thy rod and thy staff that guideth me, and her loving arms, she holds me, she holds you, she holds me. And in the presence of what one would think are my enemies, she anoints my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely kindness and mercy shall flow from me all the days that I live. For I dwell in the house of the Lord something in the breeze has been calling out to me, awakening to the earth, healing these children birthed by sacred birth. Mother, we're proud, we say your name out loud, Pachamama. 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 Pachamama.
Hey, Wolf Osterich.
Good morning.
Hey, how are you today? How's everything at Ada Hayden, a heritage park?
Well, it's getting white.
Yeah. Are you out there or are you watching?
No.
Yeah,
no,
you're able to oversee the white of Ada Hayden today. But you've taken on a volunteer effort and a critical link to kind of surveying what goes on at Ada Hayden each day for a number of years now. And what's some of your highlights there at Ada Hayden for our listeners maybe to appreciate over the weekend?
Well, right now, Trumpeter Swans is the main story. We've had almost every day just under 200. Mm-hmm. I had 196 on the 8th, but it's been ranging from about 170 to, like I said, 196. Mm-hmm. And at least one tundra swan.
And I'm wondering how they're going to go out and feed today. Earlier this week, I was able to, about half the flock, there were pushing 100 birds that day, left about 10:20 in the morning. Beautiful blue sky day. Of course, these weather conditions, have you noticed any trends? Do they go out feeding earlier when we have a weather front that we're being impacted by?
They may, but sometimes when it's like this, they may just hanker down and wait until it kind of stops.
Oh, yeah. So they are kind of following the Canada geese and foraging for the waste grain, I guess is what they live on. And in returning to Ada Hayden, those Canada geese are also assisting in keeping a big hole in the ice or a big area where these swans can gather each evening. And it's necessary that they have circulation in their legs. They need to be in open water. So the Canada geese are really kind of providing that resource that's so critical for the trumpeter swans.
Right. And actually, the swans have been taken off before the geese. The geese have been kind of congregating there and then waiting. Mm-hmm. So when you saw them at 10:22, I'm usually seeing them starting maybe around 9 o'clock is when the first family groups start heading out.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Canada geese, I've been counting anywhere from 1,200 to 2,200.
Yeah. It was that necessity of the open water that historically, you know, trumpeter swans were lost to Iowa for over a century. And in 1998, I think Iowa documented its first return of these majestic birds that are the largest waterfowl in North America. But they would always migrate to Arkansas, Oklahoma, places that had open water. And as our Canada geese population has increased, now we seem to have a real bonus of trumpeter swans overwintering in Iowa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's only been, I guess, the last 5 years or so that we've been getting a concentration of these swans here at Ada Hayden.
Yeah, and again, we've had weather conditions. The hole in the ice will get smaller and smaller as it gets colder and colder. But it's just kind of an interesting development that I'm sure the people that were involved with the trumpeter swan work early on in the 1990s, early 21st century, I guess we really didn't envision that we'd have swans like this in January at Ada Hayden.
No, it's truly a success DNR story.
In that regard, how many geese do you suppose you estimate at Ada Hayden this time of year?
Well, as I said, there's probably between 1,200 and 2,200, depending on the day.
Uh-huh. Are you noticing any outlier other species? Or are there any?
Well, right now, the only other thing out there would be mallards, and there's over probably 200 to 300 of them. But on the early days of January, we still had some common mergansers and hooded mergansers, and even an American black duck. But when the cold really hit on the third and fourth, they kind of disappeared. We even had one coot on the first and second.
Well, how rare was that, an American coot at Ada Hayden in January?
That's not very common. Although, you know, with open water, sometimes we do have one that kind of spends a good part of the winter. But I guess it got just too cold for it and then took off.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And the eagles have arrived, too. So on many days, you can see more than one circling around over the park.
Well, I really want to compliment all your efforts, all your conservation work there at Ada Hayden. Mike Metz has a question.
Yeah, Wolf, about owls. You know, we've had it's not really an eruption officially, but we've been seeing snowy owls and that. Owls in general, are you seeing owls out Ada Hayden way as far as maybe the barred and the great horn?
Occasionally I'll see or hear a barred owl, but I'm not getting out early enough in the morning in the dark to hear the great horn, which a couple other regulars that go out there keep telling me they see or hear two owls. Great horns have nested in the park. They had a nest close to the trail that a lot of photographers got harassed, so I think they've moved on to another spot, but they should be nesting here pretty soon.
They will be nesting here pretty soon. That's a good point to bring up. But watching for the snowy owls, there are snowy owl reports in different places in the state. I guess we could recommend people going to Iowa Bird to get caught up on the snowy owl locations and the need to appreciate their presence, but they also need to leave them unharassed.
Right. Give them their space.
Give them their space. Well, thank you so much, Wolf Oesterich. Thanks for all that you bring to the Ames community and your reports from Ada Hayden Heritage Park.
Well, you can see my information on the Friends of Ada Hayden blog site or Facebook page. Or if you need daily information, you can go to eBird and then locate Ada Hayden, and you can see my daily reports there.
Under eBird. Thank you, Wolf. Thanks so much. Enjoy Ada Hayden over the weekend.
All right. Thank you. And you guys have a good day.
Local Talk airs each weekday at 7 a.m. on 89.1 FM. And tell your friends far and wide, KHOI is streaming live at khoifm.org. And find that play button. We'll have this program available as soon as possible. And please remember to support this station financially when you go to the website khoifm.org and find that yellow donate button.
KHOI provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI. KHOI is a community, nonprofit, nonpartisan media.
Thank you, Local Talk producer Lynn Carey, and thank you, Dennis Hart, with your Friday report. Thank you, engineer Mike Murphy. And thanks to our guest, Anna Gray, with the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation, Mary Rankin, Lydia Youngquist, Lucia Rizzo, with the ISU Sustainability Office. And thank you, co-host Mike Metz. I have been your host for this hour, Pat Schlarbaum. Oh, and we got to mention Wolf Oesterich out there at Ada Hayden.
Our theme song, as always, is backtracked by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other artists you heard were Big Blue Sky,
Pachamama, and Chiricahua Dawn.
Stay tuned for headline news and Democracy Now! And Adagio at 9 a.m. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio. This is KHOI Story City Ames.